Economic Development, Tourism and Trade Committee. We have Representative Gardner and myself, Bob Heron. Debbie, we're going to gavel out because we don't have a quorum. We'll stand by until we get a quorum. Good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Economic Development, Tourism and Trade. We do have one piece of legislation that we're going to consider, and I'll explain plan for House Bill 67, Film Production Tax Credit. Of course, there are two prime sponsors, myself and Representative Tuck. It's the intent of the chair to move this bill after discussion next Thursday out of committee. So today, we're going to have a presentation by Representative Tuck and my staff. Juanetta Ayers will give the Alaska Film Office presentation. Joanna Bales from Revenue, the Director of Tax Division, is available for questions. Our bill drafter, Mr. Ballard, is available for questions. On Tuesday, the 15th, we're going to have some special guests come in and give testimony. Andrew McLean, the director of the movie On the Ice, and Kara Marcosis, the producer, will be here to explain why the incentives work. Nana will stop by and to give testimony. And it looks like a pretty good chance that the producers of Ghost Division, the other movie filmed here in Alaska, be here. Possibly Eric Bryman, Stephen Paul, and Joseph Rusnak, who is the director. And there's a possibility that the actor John Voight may join us. Then Kate Tassar of Evergreen Films and other businesses in our state that helped with these movie productions. And then on our third meeting, February 17th, when we consider the bill, the Alaska Film Group, Bob Crockett, will be here in person, and we've invited others to come, including Ariel Tweedo of the new reality show that's currently showing. So we do have 3 days that we're going to be taking a serious look at the incentive bill, and look forward to it very much. So for the record, Debbie, we have Representative Gardner, Representative Thompson, Representative Keller, Representative Tuck, and Representative Foster, as well as Bob here in the chair. So if you have a cell phone, please turn it off or put it on vibrate. Much appreciated. So, following the script here, we have Representative Tuck, co-prime sponsor, and my staff, Rob Earl, will present the bill, and then Juanetta will follow after that. So, Chris, if you wish, go to the front. Debbie, we also have Representative Munoz joining us. So, Representative Tuck, you have the floor, sir. Please, your name, title, and affiliation for the record, followed by Rob Earl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Chris Tuck. I'm from District 29, South Central Anchorage. And I want to thank the chair and the committee here for listening to House Bill 67, which is our extending the tax incentive credits for the film industry. As we've seen, the film industry has been an important step in diversifying Alaska's economy. The film tax credits passed by legislation in 2008 is largely responsible for this recent growth that we've all witnessed. House Bill 67 will extend those tax credits that has played the major role in the early success of Alaska's burgeoning film industry. The continued interest in filming large-scale productions in Alaska is evidence that this incentive is bringing new economic opportunities to Alaska businesses and workers. Since the program start in 2008, 15 productions have received tax credits. These tax productions filmed in Alaska for a total of 910 days and had a total Alaska spend of $14,910,810. As of January 2011, last month, there are additional 28 productions that are pre-qualified for Alaska Film Incentives. If all these productions are completed, they have an estimated an additional projected Alaska spend of another additional $83,805,000. This will bring the total projected boost to Alaska's economy since 2008 to over $100 million. And as we've seen before, as we know, there is a $100 million cap over 5 years. The tax incentive sunsets in 2013. We want to make sure that we have certainty and assurances to the movie industry that Alaska is open for business, so we're looking to extend that for an additional 10 years. So thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'll allow Rob to give us the play-by-play of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Tuck. Rob, before you introduce yourself, I'd like to you're going to explain the details, of course, but I guess I'd like you to personalize it a little bit. And some of the incentives, I mean, the committee is interested in the incentives in the whole, but could you also share with us some of the maybe finer details how it film tax credits could help the Norton Sound region, the Mat Valley, the Juneau area, Fairbanks, and of course Anchorage, how those incentives may help not only just South Central, but the rest of the state as well. So please go ahead, name and affiliation for the record, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rob Earle, staff to Chair Herron. Together with support from a broad coalition of Alaska businesses, the legislature created the Alaska Film Office and the Alaska Film Production Incentive Program in 2008. The Alaska Film Production Incentive Program is an economic development initiative created to encourage growth of the film industry in Alaska. The credits are structured to encourage productions all across Alaska in summer months and in off-season months, and to put Alaskans to work. The Film Incentive Program that passed in 2008 included a sunset after 5 years or after $100 million in credits had been issued. The program currently offers a transferable tax credit of 30% of qualified spending, an additional 10% for Alaska Hire, 2% for shooting in rural Alaska, and 2% for working in the winter months. Eligible productions can sell the credit to any company with a corporate income tax liability, offering tax relief to industries as varied as commercial fishing, mining, and oil. Tax credits are issued only after the production has been completed, filming, and an independent Alaska-owned CPA has verified Alaska expenditures. So there's a base tax credit of 30%. These expenditures must be made in Alaska. And then another 10% for wages paid to Alaskan residents. And a seasonal 2% bonus for production expenditures between October 1st and March 30th. And then, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, there's a rural location tax credit of plus 2%. I don't know, that wouldn't apply to the Mat Sioux, but to off-road areas. And it's worth noting, Mr. Chairman, that no production has enjoyed the entire 44% tax credit. The average tax credit has been around 32.5%, and the highest has been around 37.5%. HB 67 proposes extending the incentives for 10 years past their existing sunset date of July 1st, 2013 to July 1st, 2023, and continuing the funding level of $100 million in incentive programs for each five-year period. So with that, Mr. Chairman, perhaps I could walk the committee through the sectional analysis, which should be in your packets.
Yeah, if you could just obviously it's before each committee member, just paraphrase and highlight the important parts, please.
Yes, sir. Section 1 authorizes $200 million in tax credits over 10 years, limiting the amount of tax credits available in the first five-year period to $100 million ensures that $100 million credits will be available for each five-year period. Section 2 changes the qualified expenditure period from 24 to 36 months. The reasoning here being that in modern day filming, many large budget features are highly technologically advanced, and it's not unusual to take more than 2 years to get through pre-production, production, and post-production. For example, the recent film Avatar took a long time. Section 3, Mr. Chairman, sets in statute what is already general department policy, and that is to protect the commercially valuable information within a production company's tax credit application. Section 4 adds into statute a clarification that digital that the transfer of digital media to tape or film is a qualified expenditure. And Section 5, this updates statutory references to match the program extension date. Section 6, currently the Commissioner of Revenue is required to report to the legislature when the estimated aggregate amount of tax credits that can be claimed reaches $100 million. This section increases that trigger to $200 million. Section 7 extends the program for 10 years past the upcoming sunset date of July 1st, 2013, unless the $200 million ceiling is reached before then. And the last section, Mr. Chairman, updates the audit and recovery language in the bill to match the program extension. The film office has a year after the sunset date or after the $200 million ceiling has been reached to go back and address any fraudulent claims or things of that nature.
Okay. Before we go on, Debbie, could you please note for the record that we have an unexpected guest, former majority leader for the House, Ralph Samuels, is in the audience. Welcome, Ralph. Okay, is there questions for either the representative or Rob? Yes, Representative Munoz and then Representative Gardner.
Thank you. How are the tax credits brokered to prospective companies that have a corporate tax liability?
It's mostly through financial institutions.
For the record?
For the record, this is Representative Chris Tuck. Thank you very much. Is brokered through financial institutions. I know that some of them have been pre-sold before production even happened in Alaska, and then others is trying to match up those who are believed to have a high corporate tax liability with the state of Alaska with the production firms that shot up here. I can tell you recently with the Ghost Vision movie that it took them a little while, but they were able to eventually match up directly with those. And that's one of the beauties of this, of extending this out, is that now it's starting to create buzz and people are realizing more about the tax credits, and so they're seeking one another out more successfully.
Great.
Follow up?
Thank you. And then how do we compare with other states?
We are pretty competitive. If you look at the state of Louisiana, we have about, they give the same amount of tax credits. We actually give a little bit more because of our rural and our off season. However, they also guarantee that their state will buy back those tax credits if they're not able to sell them on the private markets at an 85% guarantee rate.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you may have given this information, but I just couldn't get it, absorb it quickly enough. But you said there had been 15 productions, and you gave us the number of dates and the amount. But I guess I'm curious to know how close have we come to the current limit of $100 million, and what is the kind of timeline between the time a production starts and when the state knows what credits are likely to be claimed?
That's a very good question, and we will have the film office online here real quick. They might be able to answer that a little bit better. But currently, with the 15 productions that we've had in the past, which totals $14,900,000, so roughly $15 million, and then as of January of this last month, 2011, we have additional 20 productions, and that's an additional $83,800,000. So we're getting very close to that $100,000 mark. I mean, we're about there.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions?
$100 million, Mark. $100 million.
Okay. Before we go to Juanetta, is of course I made South Central, beautiful location, very desirable for a film production. But obviously there many of us at the table here would like it to go a little bit farther into Alaska. So. Is 2% for a rural location, is that the best we can do? Is that solid, or could we adjust that up?
You know, one of the concerns that we have is the public perception of giving such a huge tax break. Right now, you combine all those together, that's 44%. I am concerned that with just a 2% that we, for rural Alaska, because of the high cost of air freight and fuel and transporting people and finding accommodations and lodging and bringing all that equipment into that area, it may not be enough. But the question then becomes, if we don't want to go higher than 44%, where should we take it from with the other tax credits that they're available? We have been very successful in bringing movies that are about Alaska that we would hope would be shot in Alaska. We did have the Whales movie, which was shot in Barrow. We also had an additional movie that was pretty much directed, acted, written for Alaska up in Barrow, so we saw some successes there. But it would be nice to be able to see that expanded off the road system deeper.
Okay. I will reserve the same question for Juanetta as well. Representative Gardner?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Qualified expenses, and as I recall, when the bill first went through, there was a cap on salaries, or, you know, for some of the big film stars, we don't obviously pick up 44% of those big salaries. But what kind of expenses are there within this state that are not qualified expenses, or is basically everything that's spent here deductible?
That's a very good question. The film office might be able to answer that a little bit better, but one of the unique things about Alaska is that they have this term above the line and below the line. So below the line is all the production people, the actors, and so on and so forth. Above the line is your producers, your writers, your directors, and so on and so forth. The state of Alaska does give the tax credits above the line and below the line. But then again, we have that additional 10% for Alaska Higher. So, and then as getting down to the specifics of equipment and rentals and so on and so forth, I may have to yield to the film office on that.
Please follow up.
So do I understand that basically everything spent here is a qualified expense with the possible exception of some portion of the salaries for big stars?
That's correct, Representative Gardner. For the record, again, it's Representative Tuck. And then also, I just want to point out that for them to verify that, it has to be an Alaska-based CPA firm that double checks.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to underscore some of the comments regarding the rural credit there. I think it's a good incentive. I think, you know, whether that can be expanded, I think that, you know, would be worth looking at, especially when you consider that, you know, rural areas, you know, being at, say, the poverty line and the impact that, you know, production like this could have on you know, getting jobs out there and so forth. I think that would be a worthy endeavor. And so for what it's worth, thank you.
Yeah, very good comments, but I think a part of that could be expanded is obviously it's important that we start thinking about workforce development in this industry. You know, it'd be better if we could supply some of those workers at all technical levels. Mm-hmm. So, seeing no other questions, Representative Tuck, you have a comment?
I just want to add that also what we want to see happen is we want to see local communities bubble up with their own productions also, you know, in rural Alaska. Rather than waiting for people to come to their area, we want to make sure that that they have the successes of for those students or for those people in their areas that want to shoot about their local communities have that opportunity. And then also I just wanted to point out that there is on section 4 of the bill a list of some of the expenditures that has to deal with the tax credit, but there are more that are in regulation. And so again, the film office can probably answer that better, but this is an example of some of the costs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. This time we're going to go to Juanetta Ayers, Director of Economic Development Division, for her presentation. Also, just as a reminder, we do have Joanna Bales, Revenue Director, Director of Tax Division, for questions, and as well as our own ledge legal, Mr. Bullard, available for questions. Morning, Juanetta. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and your if your guest wants to ring in there too as well, please put your names on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Juanetta Ayers. I'm the director for the Division of Economic Development, which is the location for the Alaska Film Office within state government. And joining me this morning is Deputy Commissioner Curtis Thayer, also with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development.
Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity to provide an overview of the Alaska Film Office and give you an indication of some of the activities that are conducted by the Alaska Film Office and some of the results of those activities. We'll just start with the statutory authority, as I think has been outlined by Representative Herron's staff and Representative Tuck, that this is a program that was authorized in 2008. And really detailed five specific actions for the office to take, one of which is the administration, and I would say the co-administration of the Alaska Film Production Incentive Program with the Department of Revenue. In addition to that, the authorizing legislation anticipates that we would cooperate with the private sector in the development of this new industry, promote Alaska as a film location, provide assistance to the private sector to conduct filming activity in the state, and to work on workforce development issues. So just stepping through some of those activities, and this is not intended to be an exhaustive list of all of the activities of the film office, but just to give you a high-level overview of some of the activities that have been conducted. One of the primary ways that we reach out to collaborate with the private sector is through our website, filmalaska.gov. And on this website, we have a complete suite of the information with regard to the incentive program, filming in Alaska, and then we also have some specialized databases to provide access to Alaskan-based suppliers, talent, and crew, and information about Alaska locations. In addition to that, we reach out and engage with industry organizations, trade associations, and allied groups in the film industry. And through speaking engagements and other targeted contacts, we field daily inquiries about the incentive program and about filming in Alaska. We also work to promote Alaska as a film location. This just gives you a sample of some of the display advertising, print advertising that has been placed in industry magazines and directories, publications such as Directors Guild of America quarterly and monthly, produced by and Locations Magazine, among others. Additionally, I just want to go back to the website again and just say that this is a primary vehicle for us to promote Alaska as a filming location. We also reach out to the film industry through trade shows and other events. These provide marketplaces where we can promote Alaska and come in contact with producers that are interested in filming in Alaska, provide them with information, and conduct follow-up activities after. Here's a list of just a few of the programs that we've participated in the last several years. Additionally, we have developed a program brochure that we do on a very short print run to produce Alaska or to promote Alaska as a leave behind piece when we're talking with possible productions coming to Alaska. This brochure can be customized as the program matures and as new productions come to Alaska. So it's not produced in large quantity, but we do have a sample available for you to take a look at. Explains the incentive program and talks about some of the advantages about filming in Alaska. This is an enlargement from the brochure that speaks about the summary of the Alaska tax credits that are available, and that was stepped through in the earlier presentation, so I won't spend much time on that. In terms of providing assistance, the film office and the Department of Commerce staff, as I've mentioned, we respond to inquiries on a daily basis about filming in Alaska. We work to do follow-up and outreach with those contacts, whether they were developed through a call into our office or one of our other promotional activities. We're meeting regularly with producers and providing introductions to state and local contacts to meet their needs. We work to explain the incentive program and assist producers with the application process. And as we've learned with the productions that come to the state, they all have very unique needs, and so it's a matter of sort of customizing the solutions for them as their specific needs are understood, and we work to address those within the resources available in Alaska. And we work with our Alaskan businesses, community representatives, and other stakeholders about how to serve this particular industry and the prospective projects that might be coming to their local jurisdictions. With regard to workforce development, we've been doing a variety of outreach activities, both to other organizations and to the industry to understand the needs and try and work through an array of different programs that might be applied to the industry to develop the domestic skilled workforce that we need in Alaska to address industry needs. This includes working with the Department of Labor on some of the apprenticeship programs and how those programs could be funded. It's important that those are industry recognized and that they provide the kind of technical careers, technical skills that the industry is in need of. We've also had some outreach and contact with the University of Alaska to look at academic programs that would lead to certificates and degrees that are recognized by the film industry. There are also private sector efforts with regard to on-the-job training, and again, these are customized to the film industry. And then additional efforts to for youth training programs through school districts and also rural outreach efforts to make sure that people are ready and understand what the opportunities are as productions might be coming to rural Alaska. Additionally, there's opportunities with skilled trade unions to understand what the their workers may need and how those could be adapted to the film industry. There's specific requirements to working on a set, and it's important, even if you have the foundational skilled trade, that you understand how to conduct yourself on set.
Representative Gardner, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Can you speak a little bit about the funding for some of these workforce development programs?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, these are in the very early development stages, and so some of them would probably come through existing funding through the agencies and institutions that I've identified. Those questions, I think, have yet to be resolved. It's not something that would be funded through the film office. But I will note also that in looking at other film programs around the country and even in local jurisdictions, I worked in Tacoma, Washington for a while, and we did a lot of film development work there and working with the Washington State Film Commission, and even in Seattle, even I looked at their program flyer for their film office, and even as of today, they still say that they need to develop a skilled workforce, and they've been engaged in this process for a long time. So it is an important aspect mm-hmm. of doing film development work, and I think it's something that does evolve over time, but there are a number of different organizations that have a stake in helping to fund this activity. So I think that we'll see that evolve over time as well.
Thank you.
Representative Foster, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get a better sense of what kind of workforce and development that we need. Mm-hmm. And so I see Department of Labor working to develop apprenticeships. Can you just give me a few examples of what kinds of training would be required for what kinds of positions?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I would be happy to provide you with a more detailed list. On off the top of my head, for example, there's a great need for skilled electricians in the film industry, and the best example that I could offer is that in addition to their skills as electricians, they need to understand the specific needs of the film industry. An apprenticeship program that would help them work through that process, or maybe an adaptation to an industry recognized apprenticeship program would be the direction we go. But our film office manager has been working with the Department of Labor on trying to detail out what those opportunities would be.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
I just wanted to also provide this overview of the Film Production Incentive Program. This is a work in progress to illustrate what the process is for pre-qualifying for the production incentive, having that evaluated and being an approved pre-qualification. Then they move into the production phase. Once their production costs have been audited, then they apply for a tax credit. And then after review process, then approved application is moved forward to the Department of Revenue that issues the tax credit certificate. So that's the process. There does seem to be, I think, a visual representation of the process, I think, helps people understand it a little bit better. Just to step through where we have been over the course of the last three fiscal years with regard to pre-qualifications that have been approved, we've had actually 45 applications submitted, 44 of which were approved, and the one that was not approved was for expenses that were incurred before the creation of the incentive program. We've had 14 approved tax credit applications and 14 tax credits that have been approved. This is a number. These numbers are moving virtually every day. We have two applications that we anticipate in the next week or so that will be processed, and these numbers will move significantly based on those. But it gives you an idea of the level of pre-qualification for the expenses that they're looking at, and then the tax credits that have been approved. So the total number then for pre-qualifications, $34.5 million tax credit applications that have been received, $4.8 million, and then those approved, $4.8 million as well. So with regard to our staffing and budget, the film office has 1.5 full-time positions. Dave Worrell is our film office development specialist. And Erin Gora is an administrative assistant who's detailed to the film office for half of her time. And then we provide additional support within the department. Deputy Commissioner Thayer is engaged in a number of different projects and activities with regard to the film office program, as has Robbie Graham, who's a special assistant to Commissioner Bell. Mark Kelsey, our communications officer, is frequently engaged in issuing information about the program. And then my time also is committed partially to the film office. With regard to our operating budget, the fiscal note on the enabling legislation called for $275,000 over the course of the program. For this FY, we've budgeted approximately $283,000 in direct program costs. The additional support costs from throughout the department are undetermined. And then we have some unallocated overhead costs for about almost $28,000. So our total costs for indirect and direct program costs would be $310,000. And with that, I hope that gives you a broad overview of the program and what has been accomplished thus far through both the film office promotional and outreach activities as well as the incentive program. And I'd be happy to take any additional questions that the committee may have.
Okay. While I wait on my committee members to for their questions, I'll start out. Of course, I pulled up your website, and I can see it right here. It's very attractive, and I like it. Is there an effort to keep it fresh? I mean, this is not the same one that's been here for months and months, is it?
No. It is modified. Dave Worrell, our film office development specialist, is very skilled at web development activities, and he does keep it updated regularly. We're posting application information that's publicly available on a regular basis, whether it's pre-qualified or approved applications. Additionally, we are going to be migrating to it's called the look and feel, the official look and feel for the state website development, and we'll be migrating to that new look and feel very shortly.
When do you think you're going to deploy that?
I don't have a specific deadline. I can tell you that a lot of the pages have been developed. It's a matter of pushing the button and saying that they're live in some cases.
Oh well, I appreciate that. Obviously that would be a particular interest to committee members. So could you give us a heads up so we're the first ones to look at it?
Sure.
You could. on the website, it talks about the big screen, but it also talks about the little screen. So I'm assuming TV, commercials, the Paula Deen food show. Do they qualify as well?
Yes, Representative Herron, television productions do qualify for the production incentives. I think that was your question with specific to the incentive program.
Yes.
Yes, it does qualify.
And so...
But there's a minimum spend that's required. Sometimes for television and commercial production, they might not be able to achieve that minimum spend.
So the ones that do, though, is you have the information so you could break that out for us in your...
Yes, actually, if you mentioned that you have the website up, if you'd like me to pull it up, I can show you where that is. That information.
Okay, we can look at it. I got a couple more questions, and so I'm not suggesting that either one of you or Mr. Worrell is out whining and dining the industry, but it's not a sterile film office. I mean, you're not just sitting back and waiting. Is there significant outreach?
I'd like to ask Deputy Commissioner Thayer to address that issue.
Deputy Commissioner Curtis Thayer for the Department of Commerce, to the chair. Yes, one of the things that we did with Commissioner Bell and myself, and as we looked through the different divisions, as we said last year, of different divisions, different programs that we had, and to see what emphasis we need to put on. The film office is one that is we have seen grow. We see the potential for it to grow. We have met on a regular basis with production companies in Anchorage. There was an outreach trip to Los Angeles that was conducted with people looking at filming in Alaska, where we had Everybody Loves Whales. It was a $30 million production, mainly in Anchorage, part of it in Barrow. There's another film that's looking at filming up here about the same time period. It's a $40 million production, and we also have a $65 million production looking at filming in Alaska, followed by an $80 million production. A couple of these movies are ones that could be that are about Alaska that obviously we want to see filmed in our state. There are some where the scripts are being modified to film in Alaska to adopt the storyline because of our tax incentive programs. And the fact that they are stable, and one of the things that they do look at, and that is the longevity of the program. Does it look to continue? One of the things that we have also been working on is infrastructure. The one thing that we do lack is a soundstage, where you actually can do a lot of the indoor shots. So not all the filming in Alaska can be done in Alaska because you don't have that infrastructure, but we do have the private sector stepping up and looking at building that infrastructure in South Central Alaska, and that infrastructure that is built does not qualify for these tax incentives. Tax incentives were for the productions, but now we're seeing the private sector come and want to build these sound stages, which only will build the economy. So in short, yes, we are doing outreach. We are meeting with production companies. We are meeting with movies interested. And we are not whining and dining. We are we're very frugal in doing that.
Coffee and donuts, is that what you're saying?
Not even that. I was buying lunches on my per diem.
I guess one more question before I go to committee members is, you know, obviously both of you have been in front of nearly all of us, if not all of us, on commerce, the Department of Commerce. And so how do you see this tie-in with ATIA, ASME, all those, you know, I mean, essentially they're important related industries. I mean, do you see a collaboration with them as well?
We do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's one of the things that we've been working towards is to make sure that we have ATIA and ASME and the film office working together. And a perfect example of that is with one of the things we have is Real Scout, and that's where we can load up film locations on a web program where for scouting opportunities, they can go and look at different shots of Alaska. Now, granted, they sometimes want to see, as you know, under a bridge at midnight as opposed to what we might have. But we have this program. But we work with ATIA, and with the additional funding that the legislature gave ATIA, we had access to some of those photographs, some of those pictures and shots, and we've uploaded them into the film office. So where the state has spent money in one hand supporting tourism, we have been able to utilize that and turn that into site locations for the film office at no additional cost to the state.
Juanetta?
Representative Herron, I think also that we need to recognize that there's residual benefits that with images of Alaska and in film and television that has some value with regard to our other industries for tourism particularly, and I think that we have seen some benefits in the fishing industry with some of the programming about commercial fishing in Alaska, and I think people are find the Alaskan lifestyle options very appealing, and that's why we've seen some of the proliferation of nonfiction television.
I guess one final question is, in the briefing, of course, we talk about the $200 million limit, you know, in the next 10 years. Is there any danger that we're going to blow right through that?
Representative Herron, I think that our experience and the experience of other, as we look at other programs around the country, I think that that's probably not going to happen. What I think what HB 67 I think does create is a level of certainty that will stimulate the kind of private sector investment that we need to see to have a strong domesticated industry with the infrastructure such as soundstage and a trained workforce that's able to work on a regular basis in the industry.
Okay. Is there other questions? Yes, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a clarification because I misspoke earlier to Representative Gardner's question about how much tax credits would be given out. Actually, the tax credits we've been giving out is $4.9 million thus far. Mm-hmm. And projected with the applications that we have right now, looks like we may incur another $10 million on top of that based on the January 2011 numbers. So when I said that we were reaching that cap, we weren't reaching the cap. We were reaching $100 million mark of money spent in Alaska, but not necessarily the tax credit. So I apologize about misspeaking on that.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the soundstage, currently under the qualified expenditures, new soundstage would not qualify. So maybe that's something that we may want to look into, I guess, more in terms of what that could do to spur, mm-hmm. you know, more activity within the industry in here in Alaska. And so I guess that would just require some more studying, I suppose, for now, and but something worth looking at, I think. So thank you.
Please.
Representative Herron, not specific to that particular question there. I will just say as a way of a comment that there are other states that have incentivized soundstage production as a part of their film program, film development program. But anecdotally, we are hearing interest from the private sector, and I think, again, the extension and the modifications that are presented in HB 67 will go a long way to providing the kind of certainty that will assure the private sector that that kind of investment is worth making. And
Representative Foster, follow up.
Sorry, just follow up. Yeah, if we could maybe get a copy of what other states are doing in terms of helping to incentivize infrastructure. Thank you.
Go ahead, Curtis.
Through the chair, Representative Foster. One thing to understand with the soundstage, and that is the soundstage is a unique structure in the sense that you need 40-foot ceilings to do the light and grid on it, and you don't have to have anything in the way, no post or anything like that. So there are very few buildings in Anchorage or in Alaska that meet those standards, and then you're looking at a soundstage being at least 10,000 to 15,000 square feet in that type of diameter, possibly adjoining each other so you could move walls and expand your soundstage. And then the ones looking at Anchorage or in South Central, they're looking at least a 10-acre track because you would have this, you would have offices, you would have a back lot, so to speak. And so it's quite of an investment to look at this. There's always, you know, you could have the Cadillac version or the Chevy model, but the one thing is we have private sector looking at this. But again, it is not as easy. Some people say, well, we have this building. It's the 40-foot height. It's the, you know, it's not a Walmart. It's not a Costco. It doesn't work. They're not, for some reason, those facilities, either they have posts in the way or their ceilings aren't high enough.
Okay, just to, for late arrivers, just to explain the plan for this legislation, let me step back for a second. I guess I got to ask the question to the administration. Do you support this legislation?
I guess that would fall to me. I will say that the administration has been very involved in this. As legislation does take various detours during the course of a legislative session, but the governor has been supportive, has introduced the legislation in the form that it was introduced at that time, yeah, and has been engaged with the film industry and meeting with the private sector on the needs of the industry.
So noted for the record, and we understand that this is the first committee referral, and it may take on other forms, but as it is today, the governor supports this legislation?
Yes. It's an extension of existing legislation, and yes.
Okay. For information, it's intent of the chair to move this bill out on February 17th, but on that day, because of scheduling, Alaska Film Group, Bob Crock will be here, the Crew Training Institute, Deborah Schlitz, Putting Alaskans to Work, is going to testify. We hope to have Ariel Tweedo from the reality show Flying Alaska. And next Tuesday, we're going to have directors, producers of On the Ice, Nana, and producers, directors, and maybe even an actor from the movie Ghost Vision, Kate Tessar, and others to testify. So thank you very much, and I'm going to ask thank you very much on this, and we'll look forward to you. But the meeting's not over yet. I'd like to ask a favor of the former House Majority Leader. Ralph, could you come forward, please? Could you please state your name for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ralph Samuels. I'm the Vice President of Government Community Relations for Holland America Line.
Obviously there's two questions. The second question will be about the presentation that you're going to give on tourism at the Lunch and Learn, so maybe we'll get a preview of that. But the first question, I think there's only one former colleague in the room here with you.
Two.
Okay. All right.
I didn't think of it that way. Fewer than I thought.
Any advice for all us rookies?
You're doing a great job, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, but any anecdotal advice for us, really? I mean,
I served for 6 years in the legislature, and it was the experience of a lifetime. I'm glad I didn't run again when I didn't run again. It's all yours, Chris. Experience of a lifetime, and in hindsight, I think coming back, if I did come back to the legislature, I'd be a better legislator now, because I wouldn't get so wrapped around the axle over who did what to this amendment to that little thing, and you keep your eye. I talked a lot and probably drove people insane, the long-term economic view of Alaska. And as far as a former legislator, not representing anybody right now, I think the best advice I could give was get out of the weeds and look 15 years down the road when you're setting policies on the film tax credit bill, or you guys are arguing about oil or gas and tourism and mining and all these things, is get your head out of the weeds a lot of times and look 10 years down the road and think more in broad philosophical terms. And where do you want the state to be, and what kind of state do you want to live in? In hindsight, it's easy for me to say that, because I realize the pressure everybody in this room is under, from everybody that's sitting in this room and everybody that's watching TV and everybody watches, what you ate for breakfast and all the details that go along with having the job you guys have, and God bless all of you for sticking your name on a ballot. But my advice would be is do the best you can to look down the road further than the next session, the next election, the next bill that's up before you, and say, how is this going to impact Alaska's, viability in the long term? That'd be my two cents, and thanks for asking.
Appreciate it.
You get to wax poetic without doing it.
Well, obviously, you're going to have a lunch and learn presentation on a topic that's very important to the committee and to committee members. That's why they wanted to be on this committee. And so could we just get a short preview, because maybe some of us can't go to the noon hour, but maybe we can get a snapshot.
Sure.
And so it'd be very helpful. Thank
as
you.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, I happen to have one in my hand, a short preview. Earlier, you had the ATIA came in and gave a presentation on tourism as a whole, and there were some questions that came up, and I've spoken to Mr. Peck, and he said that he did get back with the committee with some answers to the questions regarding the cruise industry in particular. And the lunch and learn that I'm going to do at noon is more about tourism as a whole, and I said trying to just see to teach members and staff on how all the pieces of tourism in Alaska fit together. You know, not too many details. I don't want anything. But I wanted to do in this in a shortened presentation was kind of walk you through some of the very snapshot of the short history and some of the questions that got asked of ATIA in your previous meeting and see what I can do. And I started it off, the initial slide that I've got right there is the map of most cruise itineraries. And in Alaska, in the cruise industry in Alaska, there are almost two completely separate markets. There are a series of ships from various companies that either start in Seattle or Vancouver, and they go up and down the Southeast Corridor. And most of them stop in both Juneau and Ketchikan. Some go to Haines, some go to Sitka, some go to Glacier Bay. There's different itineraries. They try. It's very competitive amongst the companies of trying to get people, once they've chosen to take a vacation and they've chosen to go to Alaska, which cruise line are they going to go on? It is competitive on a global scale between the various cruise lines. Almost as a separate market, not quite divorced from the up and down through the Southeast Corridor, is what we call in the cruise industry, we call the Gulf sailings. And those are the folks that go to either Seward or Whittier. And those people are the ones that feed the Representative Thompson, your hometown. You know, Southeast having a strong economy, and some people drift up through Southeast, through the Yukon, and end up in Fairbanks. But mostly, the Gulf ship is what feeds Anchorage. It feeds Kenai. It feeds Fairbanks. It feeds Denali, up and down in that corridor. And there are two separate markets. There are two demographics of the people that choose to buy each one. There are a multitude of companies that offer each one. And you really have to think of things when the ships started canceling and pulling out of here, which to pull a ship out of one region of the world is a pretty big decision to put a ship back in. You're taking it from somebody else, you know, and how much money are you making there? How much money can you make here? You know, you're deploying this extremely valuable, expensive asset, and how are you going to get the best value? At the same time, everybody on a cruise is on vacation. Everybody. And if they don't like their vacation, they're going to find your competitor. They're going to go on a different cruise line. If they don't like the destination, they're not going to come back to Alaska or the Caribbean or Aruba or South America or Europe or wherever. And you have to remember, it's all discretionary money. How much money do they have? What's it cost the company to do business here? All of these things factor into these two kind of separate marketing mechanisms, either the Gulf ships or the Southeast ships. And people in Southeast, I think, you know, Representative Wilson or Munoz are probably far more aware of this because the ships are right there. And a lot of times the people in Anchorage, my neighbors in Anchorage, that sometimes they get a little divorced from the ships bring so many of the people up here. In Alaska, of probably 60% of the visitors that come to Alaska show up on a ship. And of the other 40%, another quarter of them took an earlier cruise and then decided to come back. Maybe they went on the just Southeast and wanted to see Denali. Maybe they went to Denali and really liked it. Maybe they didn't get to see the mountains, so then they flew up. Whatever reason, so 70% of the visitors to Alaska are somehow associated with the cruise industry bringing them up here. And it's, you can like it or you can not like it, however you want to feel about it. And the example I like to give is in Hawaii, that number is probably 4 or 5%. Everybody flies. There are some cruises that leave San Diego. They go to the islands. They do their thing. They go back through Mexico. There's various itineraries in Hawaii, but they're not as dependent for the mechanisms. And if you look at when Princess Cruise put a ship back in the market in 2012, which they've announced, it's good news for Alaska, in 2012, they're bringing 45,000 more people. If Alaska Airlines had to fly that many people, you would have, for your summer season, three flights a day, every day, for 100 days, every day full, to get that many people here. And, you know, in Anchorage, Alaska's probably got, give or take, 20 flights a day, and adding three is, you know, my friends Alaska Airlines are going to see this, and, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot, but can you imagine doing that in Ketchikan? To get 45,000 people, they're only getting three flights a day. Now you double it for one ship. So when one ship, you saw the angst when the ships started to go away from the small business people, particularly in Southeast, but you saw it go all the way up into Fairbanks. I mean, you know, as these ships start to leave, there's no other way to get the people there. We're not like Hawaii, and there's not a lot of other destinations like us where you have these huge ships bringing up these large amounts of people. And I said, and there's, Alaskans don't like large things. You don't like large government. You don't like large companies and everything. But the reality is, that's how you are going to have to look at it. There's no other way to get those people up here in the volumes that are needed to drive the tourism industry. You're still going to need other things. You need to get a lot of drive-up traffic. You know, people that come up, they want to go fishing. They bring their RV up. They drive. They fly up. They rent a car. All of those things are important. But 70% is a very large number as far as a portion of
the. Mr. Simons, just to interject here is, you know, obviously the committee's heard House Bill 67, film, Deadliest Catch, Flying Alaska. Does that help your business?
I think so. I don't have an opinion. I was interested about the film tax credit bill. I don't have an opinion on the.
Well, I was
not
more
itself, but as far as getting Alaska's name out there is good.
Well, I meant, do the shows, do people say when they get on your ship, I'm coming here because I think I'm going to see a deadly catch? And really, realizing
that
or not.
That I don't know, but getting the name out, we've got, what, five or six reality shows. I mean, you got the Miners, the Truckers, the Sarah Palin show, you know, the myriad of shows that are out there. Having the name Alaska out in front of the American public on various channels over and over and over again is good for Alaska. It cannot take the place of a sustained marketing plan. And for all of us, you know, I thought about this sitting back there. I thought of my example to you. As all of us that have run campaigns, particularly in the urban areas, when you're in the middle of a campaign and you get earned media, you get an interview with Channel 2 or you get a front page story and you look good in the story. If you look bad in the story, it cuts the other way. But when you look good in the story and you get the earned media, you're getting a free, you know, Representative Smith looks good today that you didn't have to pay for. It is a good thing. So not only do you get the business here, you get the Drew Barrymore film or the John Voight film where they come in and they're spending money at hotel rooms and in restaurants and going up to Barrow to do some filming and all of the direct impact, but you also get the name Alaska out there when people go to the film, and it certainly can't hurt. I can't tell you quantify what it's exactly worth, but as far as earned media, it certainly doesn't take the place of a marketing plan for Alaska sustained over the long term. You want to do something that's going to be sustainable for 5 years and 10 years, because, you know, the Arnold Schwarzenegger ads that you see on TV where he and Maria Shriver, they're, you know, you'll want to come back or whatever the lines with the movie stars, that's our competition. They're trying to get people that decide to go on vacation come to California. And we probably don't see as many other states, other destinations. Mexico has them. You know, you hear some radio ads from Mexico. Hawaii does them. That's our competition. Once somebody chooses to go on vacation, we want them up here. And the more films you have of Alaska looking at an exciting lifestyle or it's adventurous or whatever it is. And I know that when the bill passed, there was some concerns that you could have not so nice films. And I know that I believe in the legislation, the original legislation, there was. You know, they can reject that. They cannot give the tax credits if it's not going to show Alaska in a good light. So I think that it's all good having those reality shows and the movies not only having the direct impact in there, but just having your earned media for our campaign collectively as Alaskans. I wanted to walk through. There were some questions asked of ATIE specifically who left and who came back. And we've put together, with the Cruise Association and myself, we've put together in your packets, we saw on the third page, in 2010, and the first three Norwegian Cruise Lines, RCL and Princess, you can see those three are all very large numbers. And I want to explain one thing, particularly, for all members, I think, is Holland America, my employer, it says the 12,000 passengers lost, what Holland America did is they had a ship which used to go to Seward, and it would drop off the passengers, and those passengers would then, maybe they would fly straight home, but a lot of them would go to Denali or go to Kenai and go fishing or spend some extra time in Anchorage and go out to dinner and all of these things. The other group that was going to cruise back had flown up, possibly to Fairbanks, to Anchorage, and then they all gathered, and then the ship cruised back. So it's really two cruises, one cruise up, one cruise back, and you had all of those people. What Holland did is they turned it into a 14-day cruise, so around the horn you went. So that means that for Representative Tuck and Gardner, you got all these people, that the ship ended up in Anchorage itself. And for Anchorage, those people are right on your doorstep. They didn't have to catch a train, they didn't have to do anything, and they could meander through town, they could buy dinner, they could do all these things. For Representative Thompson, the ship might as well have disappeared. They can't make it to Fairbanks, because the ship is going to leave the next day or that night, and it's going to go to Homer. For Homer, it's a good thing. So it was a mixed bag. For Alaska as a whole, you got half the people. And the reason, the thinking that goes into these itinerary changes, there's a lot of thought that goes into these things. And think of it from a business perspective, is these passengers now did not have to buy a plane ticket back. So they saved whatever the airfare was going to be from Fairbanks or Anchorage back to Seattle to go on to their home base. So Holland could try to charge that amount. And you're trying to see if you can make something work while staying in Alaska. Now that ship it has been scheduled again that way in 2012. So the ship didn't come or go. It's not good for you, really good for you. But for Alaska, you got you still got half the people on there. Those are the types of decisions. Who gets the money when you fly, you know, how much airfare? Because when somebody decides to go on vacation, they're only going to spend X amount. The government's going to take some, the cruise line's going to take some, the airline's going to take some, and you're always sitting there shifting these sands where there's this is how do we try to get the people to go there, and what's the competition around the world doing? What's their cost of doing business in the Caribbean and in the Mediterranean? I'll give some examples. I'm probably going way beyond my 10 minutes that you wanted me to talk. So.
Yes, a question. Representative Keller.
Good to see you, Ralph. Thank you.
Yep.
You want to comment on the changes? Did it affect the railroad much?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, the passenger numbers for the railroad dropped. There's no doubt about it. Passenger numbers for the railroad dropped. When they lost in 2010, you lost 142,000 people, Gulf passengers. I mean, it was a third of the cruise traffic. So you have a third of 60%. You lost one out of five people no longer came to Alaska. Didn't matter how much money they had in their pocket, they left. So some of those people were certainly going to be going on the train to Fairbanks, to Denali, up and back. So. What happened when those ships started to leave was a really big deal for the tourism industry. This was not a small thing, and we're starting to see some positive signs. Princess added a ship. Holland has added itineraries on the shoulder seasons, so we've added 11,000 berths coming up for 2012. So I think it had an impact. It spreads its fingers through a lot of entities, including the railroad, although there's a person behind me probably better qualified to answer that.
Thank you, Ralph.
Yep. Representative Gardner?
Thank you. Is it not also true that even for the passengers who made it to Anchorage but coming up on the cruise ship instead, that they were not then staying in hotels owned by other people, and maybe fewer meals were purchased through, while they were there because they could get them
through the food. Through the chair, that is true. Governments took a hit when either obviously if the ship disappeared, governments took a hit. And the ship that came and did the 14-day round trip, the Holland ship, they no longer spent a night in a hotel. So the bed tax revenues in Anchorage or in Fairbanks or Denali, it was a big impact. And it cut both ways depending on who you are and what business you might have had. If you owned a gift shop downtown Anchorage, you probably thought, that's not a bad thing. Every 2 weeks I got a couple thousand people dropped in my lap. But yes, it does affect the bed taxes, the sales taxes, obviously, in the Denali Borough and in Fairbanks.
Debbie, note for the record that Representative Kyle Johansson has joined us, and Representative Johansson, this is basically a courtesy visit by your former colleague, and that he's giving us a preview of the Lunch and Learn. So you might want to ask him a tough question.
Mr. Chairman, I was concerned about coming here at all. In 6 years, I've probably made everybody mad at least once. And get even time, probably.
Well, please, yeah, I intend to gavel out at 11:30, so you got plenty of time.
Okay, I'll go through my presentation. The ship's leaving the market in 2011. The minuses that are at the top there, the minus the 36, and then when it says other itinerary changes, there's sometimes onesie-twosie. Instead of coming eight times, maybe the ship left early to go to its next itinerary. Maybe it came a little bit one trip late. Maybe it's a slightly smaller ship. So those two. Coming to the market, Disney added the 43,200 passengers in a southeast itinerary, not a Gulf itinerary. So your total gain in 2011 for this season is about 7,000 cruise passengers. So you're up slightly for the coming season, but you're still 90,000 down from what you are in 2008. In 2012, Princess has already announced that they will have an additional ship with another 45,000 people coming up. Holland has come out with their 2012 schedule, which they said we put some shoulder extra sailings on, and we juggled various sizes of ships in there. We're up about 11,000 guests. So, and other companies, we haven't seen itineraries come out. They're usually about this time of year, sometime between, depends on the company, somewhere between Christmas and May, you'll start to see itineraries start to come out for the 2012 season. So the reaction time, because you're always wanting to make sure that your person who's on vacation is having fun, you want to make sure that your dock space is taken care of, all the logistics, but also that your guests are going to have something that they want to do. You're trying to make sure that your shore excursions, your helicopter flight scene, and all of that is taken care of. So it's quite a bit of work when you start moving these ships around. And I did have one example that I want to show you, and I only had two copies. I couldn't get another enough quick enough. Is this once again is Alaska's competition. This is from the Florida Caribbean Cruise Association, and I'll pass it around after the meeting is over. And you've got all sorts. I mean, you've got Cozumel, you've got Aruba, you got all these places. They all vie amongst themselves to get ships. I mean, this is competition between the destinations. It's like competition between the companies. But also the region is trying to get ships to come to the region and then let the destinations fight it out. And then the Mediterranean has their own also. So the Alaska Cruise Association, whose logo was on the presentation that I gave you today, they try to do the same thing. You're trying to get the companies to say, look, Alaska is a good place to do business, which is why you see us down here constantly saying, you've got to, reduce the cost of doing business. And you can tell just in the last couple of years, compared to when that initiative passed. When I took the job at Holland, it was a chilling effect almost. If you walk into the office there, and it was, probably blame both sides. The industry's in this corner. There was no conversation between the government. And right now, I think that from Holland's perspective, if you want to have a conversation, you may not agree on everything. But if you want to have a conversation with the people of Alaska, I think me being invited here by the chairman shows the doors are open, and to the governor's office, to the legislature, and I think the relationship that you've seen just in the last 3 or 4 years, whether you agree or disagree on all of the issues, the relationship is tremendously better. Just in my short 3 years at the company, you can tell the difference. So I'll be happy to answer any questions, or I'll at lunch you can come and listen to the whole nine yards.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes yet. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pun is intended here. Rising tide raises all ships. And you had mentioned that 60% of the visitors in the state come by ship, and 40% of those that come here via ship come back later because they have decided they like Alaska so much they would like to come back. Is that correct? Is that number?
It was of the remaining 40%, 25%. So another 10% of the total.
I see, okay.
Of the total started on a cruise somehow.
And I think people tend to think that the cruise industry is a great benefit to maybe Southeast and South Central. And then you had mentioned, you know, you go up Denali and up to Fairbanks, and it's good for them. And I just wanted to point out that it's also good for rural Alaska. I've had constituents contact me, tour operators, and say, you know, some of those folks, they come to Alaska, they like it here, and they decide they want to explore. You know, they want to get off the road system, and they want to get out to rural Alaska. And so I just wanted to make that point that it's good for all Alaskans. So.
And through the chair, Representative Foster, I was previously down here a couple of weeks ago and had conversations with some other members of the Bush Caucus. And we talked about trying to reach out and say, what can we do to try to do more of the, if you're going to hire Alaskans, what can we do to at least have the opportunities afforded. Nobody's going to make any guarantees. You're going to hire certain people, but you hire. We've got a group of people in the office that I work in, rather, that manage the various Princess Lodges, and they are a group of very sharp Alaskans, mortgages, kids, and full time work for a cruise line. And hopefully, you guys will get a chance to meet them. We're trying to put something together. I know you all get sick of the fly-ins coming in, but we're trying to do something. And while we're here, we'll try to get some of the hiring people to meet with them. You know, I'd spoken with Representative Jewell and Representative Dick about it, about trying to see, you know, how do we open that door more into the Western Alaska area to do some, at least start down that road.
Yep, Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the opportunity to parachute into your committee here. You know, an opportunity to talk to Mr. Samuels. Couldn't pass it up. You mentioned down in the Caribbean ports competing against each other. If I got that correctly, for your business.
Correct.
Is that accurate?
That is correct.
Now, in Alaska, you are hampered by logistics timing. We can't have Juneau versus Ketchikan because you only have so much time to get up and down the coast. Would it be fair to say that as an industry and as a state, when we market the cruise industry, we are marketing all of Alaska. We're not marketing Cozumel versus some other independent port. We have to market it as one big package, and as Representative Foster said, that raises everybody's opportunity to benefit from the state's investment as well as the industry's investment in marketing.
Through the chair, Representative Hanson, that is an entirely accurate statement. I mean, people are going to come to Alaska. You've got towns in the same state. It's far different than going to different countries that are going to fight for your business. You know, geography rules the day. Everybody stops at Ketchikan first. You know, good, bad, or indifferent, because you're coming up, it's the first port you've been to sea a long time. So there's some things where the logistics and the geography run it, but you are entirely right. You have to market Alaska as an entity, and then, you know, the various cruise lines, we'll fight amongst ourselves for the passengers. I have no, there's no doubt about that, but you have to market Alaska as an entity to come in here, and there's various points. One cruise line might have an itinerary to Glacier Bay. You know, you're always trying to have the new thing to try to snag the passengers in the competitive environment. But you are correct that you need to market Alaska as an entity.
One short follow-up.
Yeah, sure. Follow-up, sir. Go ahead.
And because of geography, the port time in Ketchikan is much smaller than Juneau or Haines or Skagway. So what is the industry doing to move either Victoria, Seattle, or Vancouver closer to Ketchikan?
Representative Johansson, that's a long-term project that we've been working on.
Seriously, though, it is a concern of the community.
It's a concern that Ketchikan constantly has, and it comes down to geography, because the competition, when the ships go to Ketchikan, the people of Ketchikan want the ships to stay there longer, and the ships have to get to the next port. You know, you've got daylight issues. You're not going to show up at Ketchikan at 3 o'clock in the morning and leave at 5 o'clock in the morning. So you have all of these various things in there, and we understand that the concerns that Ketchikan has constantly. Most of them, as you know, are going to be geography related.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you for stopping in.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Again, this is a preview of the Lunch and Learn, and it's going to be a common practice. We're going to try to do as many previews. This one went a little long, but that's okay. We got advice from the former legislator. So, Debbie, we're adjourned at 11:32.